Spirit Radio Podcasts.
The Cabinet are meeting this morning and are expected to announce that phase one of the reopening plan from lockdown will commence on Monday. And of course, we're also waiting for progress on government formation. Here to tell us more, we have our regular political commentator, Susan Phillips. You're very welcome to the show, Susan.
Thank you, Karen.
It's great to have you along, and you're a regular here. I'm the kind of blow-in today, so...
I'm sure you'll be grand.
Thank you very much. First of all, Susan, tell us about the Cabinet meeting. What do you think we can expect today?
Well, you know, we've been hearing about these phases of Ireland being opened up again, and so this is phase one. So the Cabinet meets today. They've had recommendations from... Well, I'll give you the long wording of it, the National Public Health Emergency Team. So they've had recommendations, and the recommendations would, if passed by Cabinet, they'll be announced later today. And Kieran, there's nothing that we weren't really expecting. Maybe there'll be some additions, but basically outdoor construction work can start. Apparently 15,000 small businesses can open, golf and tennis clubs, garden centres, farmers markets, you know, certain shops like opticians and hardware shops. And then, you know, we probably didn't know this anyway, but motor and bicycle repair shops and little details and gardeners who come and cut your lawns, that kind of thing.
So very practical kind of things that people might really need at this stage.
Well, definitely. Now, whether, you know, people have had their lawns cut, I've no idea, but just pretty obvious things. And then there's an addition, Kieran, which just says that up to four people who don't live together, i.e. they're not a family, they can meet outdoors, and as long as they're 2 metres apart.
And they're socially distancing. I think people will really welcome that, because they're... But I actually think there are some people who have jumped the gun on that one in particular.
And yes, I think there are. And we've been very blessed with the good weather, you see. So people probably were sitting in their gardens, and maybe their neighbours or their family sat in the gardens too. I think people have been pretty good about not going into anybody else's house. I get that impression.
Absolutely, I do as well, because I walk around a lot in the mornings, and you know, you kind of get a feel for this kind of thing. But there's definitely a pent-up kind of desire for this next phase of the relaxation.
Well, there definitely is. I mean, what isn't so clear, and this is a problem, at the moment, do you remember that big subsidy? I think it's 350 a week.
Yes.
And that, apparently, I suppose we thought it was so far ahead. That's due to stop on June the 8th. So we're kind of waiting to hear, could that be stretched a bit longer? And Pascal Donoghue was on radio earlier, where he just said at this stage he couldn't be sure, because he'd have to see how everything was going. But that sort of kept people going, hasn't it, that money?
It really has. And actually, an answer like that, which is so vague, probably doesn't give a lot of solace to people. It'll probably worry some people, I imagine. But
yeah, but you see, the real difficulty is that even on the ground, opinions differ between people who, like maybe you and I, who listen to what's being told and we try to be fairly obedient. But if you follow the analysis, and I do, and you're not scientific, so you can't argue it in your head, you do see that there's so many different angles. And, you know, we've got this professor from UCD, you've probably heard of her, Dolores Cahill.
Oh, yes, indeed, yeah.
And she's stating publicly, I heard it with my own ears, that if you've had COVID-19, you cannot get it again. And she's saying that the lockdown is completely unnecessary. Now, that's one opinion. And then other people say, well, is the cure, that's us all being locked in and little businesses totally closing, is the cure worse than the disease? So it's a dilemma, isn't it?
It really is. And, you know, personally, I'm very, I can understand where she's coming from,
yeah.
But my family, we actually had COVID, and we actually recovered from it, thankfully.
Oh, have you had it?
I have indeed, yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant. And
it's great if she's right, but to be honest, looking at the science, and, you know, I'm not a scientist, but reading as much as I can about it, because I'm obviously very interested, there's no clear science that says one way or the other, whether you are or not. You could kind of guess that, yes, I should be, but you have to kind of assume that you're still at risk. I think that's the only pragmatic and sensible thing to do, because there's just so much they don't know.
It depends who you listen to. This is what worries me, because if you listen to somebody like Dolores Cahill, and then you listen to another scientist elsewhere, and then you listen to the ones in Sweden who've said quite openly, we're not having a lockdown. Okay, if you want to be socially distanced, please help yourselves. But they're pretty well going on as ever with children back at school.
Yeah, I have a lot of connections in Sweden, and I was talking to them about it, and they say, well, actually, it's not quite the way it might appear from outside, because they are very socially aware anyway. And there was a very funny post on Facebook that showed, you know, before and after picture of Swedish people queuing for a bus during lockdown. And, you know, there was the obvious gap between everybody. And then the other picture was before the lock, before COVID-19, sorry. And the other before picture, they were equally far apart. They just do that. You know, society is a little bit different there. They're very compliant. And, oh yes, they've had some issues. And unfortunately, reading today's papers, they now have issues in the nursing homes. Yeah.
We've shown that we're very compliant. Most people would always say the Irish are not. Yeah. But actually, we have, as a nation, we've been quite compliant, haven't we, over the last 2 months?
It's remarkable, and it's lovely to see it. And I actually think the team, you know, the emergency team have actually managed it very well, and they've kind of kept people going. I do get this feeling that what they've done so far has been brilliant, but people are getting a little bit fragile now, and you know, there's a much harder job ahead, is to keep that level of compliance and cooperation going in the next number of weeks. But
I think so, and we've noticed now, as when the Dáil convenes and there's very few allowed in it at the same time, you're getting a kind of a critical angle now. And the interesting thing is, Kieran, that the formation of government talks, we're into day five, so today's Friday, so they've been going since Monday, and we talk about the two civil war parties. I mean, it's incredible that they're even talking, but they are. But all the talks are with the Green Party, and so they've got to have discussions about discussions. And you know, one point of view is that such issues such as greenhouse gases must be sorted out now, and the other issue or the other opinion is absolute rubbish. Why should one motorway around Galway decide whether or not we have government? You know, you can see this. You know, some people say, well, you've got to have a plan, but we're in the middle of a total economic collapse, aren't we?
Yeah.
And we can't say we can have this number of houses, but we can't say anything. We just want a government.
And do you think, Susan, is some of it like the hot potato, that they're all kind of passing it around and actually nobody's all that keen to actually take the responsibility and move forward? It seems, I mean, that's a pretty radical thing for me to say, but do you think there's an element of that going on?
I definitely think there's an element of what you just said earlier, that we're actually, I don't know if you used the words, doing quite well, but most people would say that they feel we've had good leadership from what we call the acting government, haven't we? We feel
absolutely.
And as you say, maybe it's getting a little bit scratchy now. So, and then we've got the Social Democrats, who some people have thought might join in, and they're saying categorically they won't. I've always hoped that the Labour Party, they've got six members. I've always hoped that maybe Mr. Kelly will bring Labour in for the talks, but we don't know about that. But in the end, I think people are saying, look, we've got to have a government and just stop this stuff about rural farmers and emissions. Just get together and have some decent decisions. You know, get back in, because at the moment, we can't pass legislation. You know that, don't
you? Yeah, I do realise that, and it kind of was something I actually didn't realise. I just saw it in the small print somewhere, and it just seems, how can you really go on running a country if you can't actually pass laws? And it's going to become a huge issue, isn't it? I think people are going to get really tired and impatient soon. We kind of mentioned it earlier about
this issue
too. I think
they will,
because
if you look back a little bit, and I do from time to time, on coalitions, probably none of your listeners, well, they would actually, they would know, because they're pretty informed. But the last time we had in Ireland single party government was 1987. And okay, everybody remembers the 16 years they learned in history, that from 1932 to 1948 we had Fianna Fáil with De Valera. Everybody remembers those 16 years. But actually, since 1987, we've had coalitions.
So
and
that's,
we've
that's
sort
since
of,
Charlie well, High's yeah, days, yeah?
We've sort of got used to it. And, you know, we've had some pretty odd coalitions, but we've had some good ones. And we had the one after De Valera came, didn't do well in the 48 election. We had something called the first inter-party government, and that was Clann Publicta and Fine Gael and Labour, and they all got together, and interestingly enough, much to everybody's surprise, they actually declared the Republic of Ireland in 1948. And then during that time we had the crisis surrounding the mother and child scheme with Noel Brown. So you can't sort of say, well, every coalition is smooth, but at the same time, a lot of them have worked quite well.
Yeah, and they've delivered the goods.
Yeah.
What do you think on what's going to happen today? I'm just going to come back now to the actual cabinet meeting. Is there any chance they might say we're not going to relax things on Monday?
I think they'd be very foolish to, because like we've almost said, there's an underplay of people who are just getting a little bit. They want to get out. They want to get going. And then if, in fact, you close down our total economy for listening to the health advice, which says, you know, no, be very, very careful, then you could end up with no village shops, with no hospitals. So it's such a balance, isn't it, to say, well, what should happen? So my guess today is that everything that I've mentioned will go ahead. Now, what we don't know is whether they're going to say, well, actually, if you're over 70, you know, don't worry anymore, you could now drive to Galway and back in the day. We don't know that, do we?
No, we don't. I don't imagine that will be coming out this afternoon. Though, so
I fear not.
Political commentator Susan, thank you, Susan Phillips, thank you so much for being on with us this morning. Really appreciate it and giving that insight. And no doubt you'll
thank
be back
you.
Again shortly with Ronan in the hot seat.
Thank you.
Lovely talking to you. Spirit. Up for you next, we have a guy called Jason Everett. He's an international speaker from the United States, of course, who talks about love and relationships. That's his thing. And earlier, Spirit Radio Steve Johnson caught up with him. And this morning, we'll have a little part of that interview. And it's especially, but not exclusively, for men. He's talking about his book, The Dating Blueprint, Advice for Men from 10,000 Women, apparently. Not sure how I'd handle taking all that advice about what to do and what not to do in a dating relationship. So this should be interesting. Here's Jason Everett.
My name is Jason Everett, and I run a ministry called Chastity Project. Our website is chastity.com. And what we've been doing for the last 20 years or so is just traveling around the world, speaking on the virtue of chastity and God's plan for human love, which is something that appeals, you know, applies to high school students, university students, married couples, parents. It's a virtue that we're all called to practice. A lot of people get it confused, the word chastity, with abstinence, which just means no sex, or with celibacy, which means you're not married. On the other hand, chastity is a virtue that we all need to practice that involves purity of heart, not only what you how you behave, but what you look at, what you listen to. It's a virtue that orders our sexual desires. It doesn't really eliminate or kill our desires because that's not healthy. It orders them according to the demands of real love. And so most of the presentations we give are in high schools and universities. But as I said, we also give them for parents and married couples as well.
That's great, Jason. You've written a new book. It's called The Dating Blueprint. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, we several years ago released a book called How to Find Your Soulmate Without Losing Your Soul, 21 Secrets for Women. And it was a real big hit with the women. We, you know, sold hundreds of thousands of copies, and people kept saying, well, where's the book for the guys? Where's the book for the guys? And I kept saying, well, you know, guys don't read. And people like, no, we're literate. And so I finally caved in and wrote this book for the guys. And I figured, what is it guys really need? And guys need specifics. Like, just don't give me abstract principles. Just like, tell me what I'm supposed to do. And then we give me some marching orders, some instructions, then we can go. And I started writing this book on just dating. And I realized, you know what? Guys don't care what I say. What guys want to really know is what the women think about this stuff. And so what I did is I did a survey of more than 10,000 women asking them, you know, what is it you want in a dating relationship? Like, how would you want a guy to ask you out? How do you not want to be asked out? And what about dating etiquette? Where do you not want to go on a first date? And where do you want to go? And, you know, if there's anything you want a guy to get out of his life before he asks you on a date, what is that thing? And just asked them very concrete questions and said, hey, ladies, you know, put your feedback in, you know, the section below. And man, the floodgates opened. I mean, within hours, we'd received more than 30,000 words of feedback, which is longer than the whole book was at that point. But it was a goldmine of just stuff I wish I knew 20 years ago when I was dating. Of just like when you ask a girl on a date, there's one word you have to say when you ask her out. And that's the word date. You can't say, do you want to hang out? We should get coffee. We should get together sometime. You want to come over, Netflix and chill? Like, no, use the word date. Because if you don't use that word, frankly, they have no idea what you're talking about. Like, do you hang out? Well, what does that mean? You want to like sit around in your basement and play video games together? Like, what do you mean hang out? But when you say the word date, it shows that you have a little bit of confidence and there's intentionality. There's clarity. She doesn't have to wonder what you're inviting her toward. And so the whole book is filled with just real practical tips like that. Like, where do you not want to go on a first date? The girls don't want to go to the movies on a first date. Third date, fourth date, fine, whatever. First or second date, don't. Because the whole point of a first or second date is to get to know someone better. It's kind of hard to do that when you're sitting in a dark room staring at a screen for 2 hours.
Fantastic. It sounds absolutely amazing, Jason. Is it a long book?
No, because it's for guys. So it's, you know, we kept this short and sweet. And so it's like, what, like 160 pages. So it's on the shorter end of our books. But we just wanted to keep it super practical. So the, you know, the first chapter is more focused on, okay, you want a date, but like, you got to get your house in order. Okay. This is the stuff that you need to get in your life in proper order before you even begin that dating relationship. That certain stuff needs to be set in place. And then after we kind of get that in place, then we give the guys an opportunity to figure out, is she the one? You know, is this the right girl and is this the right time? and we kind of give them tips on how to know if this is the right person. So helping them in that discernment process. Then the third chapter, which is the most meat of the book, which is Ask Her Out, where it goes through all these specific responses of the women of how they want to be asked out, how they do not want to be asked out through a text message. They want to be asked out face to face. Show some courage. Fourth one is Date Your Soulmate, which talks about dating etiquette and actually how to date the person. And then fifth is preparing for the marriage. And then number six is continuing to date your spouse inside of marriage and what that's supposed to look like. And so we wanted to make sure that the guys weren't thinking, oh, well, this is just so you can get a girl to go on one date with you. It's like, no, this is to hopefully set the trajectory of dating this woman for the rest of your life, you know, for several years and dating and engagement, and then continuing to date within marriage, because that's what your kids need to see, is that the pursuit continues, even in a sense, after you've captured your prize.
Wow. So it's called The Dating Blueprint, but I can take it that it's not a one size fits all.
No. I mean, every person is going to be kind of in a different situation right now. I mean, some people are like in great relationships and they want to learn how to make it stronger. Other people are, you know, just getting started and trying to figure out, okay, how do I navigate through these single years of my life and find the right person for me? And so it's not kind of a cookie cutter. This is what you got to do. It's more like you got to enter the heart of a woman. Like, what's going on? Because the women are very mysterious beings. I'm sure you realize that. I realize that. Every man on earth, mysterious. But this kind of gave them an opportunity to say what they were kind of hoping for when they didn't feel it was their place to tell a guy, hey, I wish you'd do this on the first date. They don't want to be that girl to be that pushy and just, hey, do this. Because they want it to come from us. But how are we supposed to know what they want if they don't tell us? And I figured, look, I'll just stand in the middle. I'll stand in the breach. You girls tell me, and then I'll tell the guys. So that was basically the operating, you know, the mentality behind the book.
Do you address the question of, you know, if a guy or if a girl, for that matter, kind of decides, actually, this is not the one, a proper, ordered, respectful and loving way of ending the relationship?
Yeah, no, I'm really glad you brought that up, because this was one of the biggest things that the girls mentioned, that one, that just as the beginning of a relationship should be clear and intentional, likewise, the end of the relationship should be clear and intentional and honorable, meaning don't ghost. Now, what ghosting is this practice that so many guys and even some girls have done of expressing an initial romantic attraction towards someone. And then when you lose interest on them, you basically just fall off the face of the earth and you disappear. And they're left to wonder, wait a minute, what happened there? Did I do something wrong? Does he like another girl? Is he really busy? Was he abducted by aliens? Was he deported? Like, where did that guy go? And so that's a very painful, and the guy might be doing it because, well, I don't want to hurt her and tell her I'm not really interested. Well, it causes so much unnecessary hurt and confusion that you don't have the courage. I mean, you might have muster up the courage to ask her out because there's in it something in it for you. But how about when it's time to say, hey, maybe I don't think we're the best match and there's nothing in it for you? Do you then have the courage and the confidence and the respect to have intentionality and clarity with her? And so, yeah, it might hurt a little bit if you're honest, but she's a big girl. She can handle this. It's better than her having to sit around for months wondering where the heck you are and what she did wrong. And so we need to make sure that we're entering with clarity and exiting. And just the one basic idea that's underneath all these themes is that, you know, we have right now a culture of single people who kind of pretend like they're dating. Then we have a culture of dating people who behave like they're married, and we're stuck with a culture of married people who seem to think they're single. Everything's out of order. And so if you're not dating a guy, then don't behave like you're his girlfriend. You're not his girlfriend. If you're his girlfriend, don't behave like his wife, because you're not. And if you are his wife, live as one. And if men would just do the same thing, how much simpler relationships would be.
Absolutely. The other question that just came to mind, Jason, as you were talking, was in fairness to guys, dating in an intentional way, actually considering, you know, a future marriage partner, it could be a very lonely experience. You can lose touch with your friends. You can sometimes not know who you can talk to, and obviously you're trying to weigh up fairly weighty decisions. Do you have any advice on finding, I suppose, trusted advisors, trusted supporters, you know, when you are in a dating relationship?
Yeah, that's one thing we really recommend to the guys and the girls, that, you know, any prime minister or any president or whoever is always surrounded by a cabinet of ministers that can give them advice on a host of issues, from foreign diplomacy to the economy to military intelligence. And if they think they can just run a country on their own, it's going to be a train wreck if they're not listening to people who are smarter than they are in all these different fields. And the same goes for dating relationship. If you want to just go Lone Ranger and it's just her and I against the whole world, that's just immature. We need to tap into the wisdom of our parents, of our youth ministers, of our priests, of our good friends. Hey, what do you think about this girl? Do you think we, you know, make a good relationship? Because the closer you are in love, whether it's emotionally, physically, your judgment is toast. I mean, let's just be honest. It's almost like if you're holding a book 2 inches away from your eyes, you can't read the text. It's blurry. It's too close. If you're more at a distance from that, you can see it clear. And so the people that are outside of the relationship, the family, the close friends, they can often see the good as well as the red flags and the bad that we might not be able to. And so you will make a much better marriage choice if you're not choosing by yourself.
That's Jason Everett talking to Steve there. Spirit. Well, lockdown has been an extremely challenging and upsetting time for families grieving the loss of loved ones, and particularly those who haven't been able to have an open funeral or a proper funeral due to the COVID-19 precautions. The Irish Hospice Foundation have launched a new Care and Inform online hub to provide accurate information around funerals and grieving throughout the COVID-19 crisis. Now, on the line to tell us more, we have Rebecca Lloyd, and Rebecca is the Public Engagement Officer at the Irish Hospice Foundation. You're very welcome to the show this morning, Rebecca.
Thank you, Kieran. Good morning.
Good morning to you too. Rebecca, first of all, with lockdown and the COVID-19 precautions, maybe you could give us an update on the protocol that's currently in place for funerals.
Well, the protocol that's currently in place for funerals is less than 6 people allowed, with no physical contact. And depending on how the person has died will depend on how the body is treated, so whether it's embalmed or not, and how the body is transported. So I suppose a lot of funerals now, even though we have flattened the curve, the safety and the security of members of family and those who are grieving is paramount. So I suppose it's not what we can't do, it's what we can do, because all of these rules and regulations are designed to keep us safe. Yeah. They're not designed to stop us doing things, they're designed to keep us safe. So everybody's trying to keep people safe and provide opportunities for people to say goodbye with video conferencing, or for people, you know, people can still stand outside of a church, socially distanced. And I mean, we're hoping as part of the 5-stage plan that we might see some of that lifting, but I think as everybody knows now, the rules are changing almost on a daily basis, and we need to make sure that we stay in close contact with what the government is deciding and about the numbers and how many people are still suffering with the coronavirus.
Okay, and I suppose that's where your Care and Inform online hub comes in. It's about making sure that people can get timely and up-to-date practical advice about the absolute current situation at a given time if they have to go through this terribly upsetting and difficult experience.
Absolutely. What we've tried to do is, I mean, we're all humans, so we all feel a little bit unsure in these current times, in these exceptional times, and usually when we feel that we are unsure of something, we go back to rituals. We go back to the rituals of life and death. And unfortunately, those rituals that we would lean on and lean on as a society and lean on as friends, they've changed slightly. And it's that change that can give us that feeling of unsurety.
Yeah, and so, I know I have a friend, a Dutch friend, who says we Irish people seem to do funerals better than anybody else, you know. It is a very Irish thing, part of our society, that funerals really have a huge importance, and that whole, the support it gives the grieving parties, and I guess the support we all get from being part of it. It's a really big thing, and things have really changed in that department for people, haven't they?
Absolutely. It is. It's a really, really big thing. And things have changed and will continue to change. But what I think is really beautiful about the Irish people is how, with these unbelievable changes, we have also managed to adapt. So we were talking to someone whose niece had died, unfortunately, a short time ago. And he was saying the amount of handwritten letters he'd received. So, you know, we're rediscovering the lost art of letter writing. You know, actually sitting down and thinking about what can I say? I can't go around, so what can I say? And sitting down and taking that time. Or people lying in the streets. Or people, we're putting flowers in front of the hearth. Or standing outside people's windows. I mean, we might not have the traditions that we have, but we are discovering and rediscovering new traditions in order to support each other and help each other. So I suppose the traditions come from love and empathy and compassion. So what isn't lost is love and empathy and compassion.
Well, that's important, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, in the organisation you're involved in, obviously you're involved in end-of-life care, and bereavement is a fact of life and a regular occurrence for you, unfortunately. What supports are there in place in those in the area of end-of-life care and bereavement during COVID-19?
Well, what we've done with our Care and Inform hub is we've provided, I suppose we're trying to provide as much bite size, because we understand, you know, we can only take on so much information, and we've all become almost information gannets at the moment, that we're consuming information at such high rates. We're listening to the news more. Well, I feel I am, and I'm on.
Well, I think we're all the same.
Yeah, we're all consuming all this information. So we've tried to make information in little films, or we've got some little sound bites from somewhere. We have webinars for bereavement, and we also have, if you do have somebody in hospital with coronavirus, what can you do? Because it is all slightly different as to where a person might be, whether they're in a nursing home, whether they're at home, or whether they're in the hospital environment. And there's lots of different changes that might occur, and it depends on so many different things. So we've tried to provide information for people wherever they are. To help them, whether people are dying from, I say, a normal illness. So, you know, unfortunately, you know, 8 people die in Ireland every day with illness, and that there are obviously now more that are dying of coronavirus. So we there are still people dying from cancer and heart disease, and we still need to mind those people as well. So a lot of our information is just, Where are you at? And then wherever you are, we have something for you. So if you're a carer, we have something for you. If you have someone that you love in a nursing home, we have information for you. If you're looking after somebody at home, we have information for you. So wherever anybody is on that trajectory, we hopefully have something for you. And we're every single day we're trying to fill in the gaps. Is there anything missing? Are we looking after everybody? Well, are there any questions that we don't know the answer to? And then we'll go figure out those.
Fair enough. And of course, we hope that nobody ever has to avail of these information services. But unfortunately, it's a reality that a lot of people will need that information. And it's great that you're providing it in a comprehensive way like that. Now, how can people access the online Care and Inform hub that the Irish Hospice Foundation have set up? How do they get to it? How do they get that information?
Well, you can find us on all social media. So we're very trendy. We're on Instagram. We're on, I don't think we're on Snapchat yet, so we're not that trendy.
That's one to tick off soon. That's on the plan, isn't it?
So we're on Instagram, we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook as Irish Hospice. And then online is hospicefoundation.ie /care and inform. But actually, if people forget all of that, if you just type care and inform, we come up. So you'll be able to find us that way.
Brilliant. Rebecca, you do such great work, and it's brilliant that you're taking the time and this initiative to make it easy for people at a particularly difficult time. It's a very positive thing, and great to see. It just amazes me how many people have just come up with some just amazing solutions to very difficult problems, all because we have to manage.
We live in a beautiful country full of beautiful, caring compassionate people. It is wonderful, yeah.
We do indeed. And you know, the one thing that always strikes me every day when we listen to the news and we hear the statistics or we hear the briefings from the department and we're talking about numbers and we all get fixated about the numbers. And I always try to remember that behind each one of those numbers, there's a family, there's a brother, there's a sister, there's a mother, there's somebody grieving. Thank you so much for that amazing work. It's very important and we really appreciate what you guys do. And
thank you so much for having us, Kieran.
No, thank you for joining us on the show today. Really, really appreciate it. And I'm sure our listeners do as well.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.